Let's welcome Lynn. She's going to speak on her experience, strength, and hope. And go ahead, Lynn, it's all yours.
Good morning, everybody, or wherever you are. Good afternoon, evening. So great to be on this meeting, and thank you for inviting me to speak. I'm new to this meeting. I've committed to coming back by accepting a service position right off the bat, which keeps me coming back no matter how I feel. Because when I don't feel like going to a meeting and I have a commitment, I go, and it's usually the best meeting I ever had. So I know that I'm in trouble if I feel like skipping a meeting. My experience in the program began in 2020 during the pandemic. And I don't know how far to go back. I just want to let you know that I grew up in a family where alcoholism and drug addiction, and especially compulsive overeating, was most people's multiple drugs of dealing with the, I mean, choice of dealing with the family. So either the aunts and uncles were alcoholics or they were morbidly obese. And my grandparents, my grandmother was a child in the Holocaust and was one of two people in her whole family who made it out. So when she moved to San Francisco with her Swedish husband, my mom grew up without any relatives. It was just them, the five of them, the parents and three girls. And gosh, I asked her once when I was in recovery, what was it like not to have grandparents or cousins, aunts and uncles? And she said she was angry all her life because they moved into an immigrant community in San Francisco, which was the Sunset District, where a lot of the immigrants were moving in at that time, especially from Europe in the 20s, 1920s. And she said she grew up angry because all her friends had tons of cousins, tons of two sets of grandparents, whatever. The point is, my family was very tight. So this constellation, the mom, dad, and the three girls, when they grew up, they all had children, and we met every month for a dinner my whole life. That we all lived in the San Francisco Bay Area. We met for dinner. And for some reason, and I know now why, but alcoholism among the children was rampant. I mean, my aunts and uncles, all family parties involved a lot of drinking. One aunt was got an angry drunk. The other one was way sexually overt. The more she drank onto the young male nephews and so on and so forth, it was a big problem. But my parents didn't do that. They didn't do that. They didn't drink, get drunk. My mother usually took a nap after dinner because she was tired, and my dad, you know, just sat around. When I grew up, my family moved to Southern California away from the family, and my mother went into a depression because she'd never been so far away from her family before, but my dad was transferred. And I grew up in a neighborhood that we were the model home that we bought. And so there were no houses around us. So it was just the five of us again, just all by ourselves. And there was a lot of animosity among the children. My oldest brother, 3 years older, hated my guts because I was the youngest. I was the girl and I could do no wrong. And he was always getting in trouble. So he had a lot of animosity against me and was beat me up all the time and angered. I became a whiny child. And my mom didn't believe me. She'd say, you know, you must have had a part in it, whatever. But I grew up to be extremely stubborn and dug in my heels and fought for every single thing I wanted, including what was on TV, what we watched when my parents weren't home. And I never got what I wanted. So I became very, very stubborn. When I grew up and went to college, I had a problem with my weight. So basically, I'm a food addict. I didn't say that. I'm a food addict, but also I have left, I have been through the Al-Anon program, and it helped me immensely to deal with my feelings and emotions. And that's why I'm at this meeting, because I wasn't getting what I wanted anymore out of those meetings and wanted to come and hear the big book steps around those kind of tendencies and whatever they call it, chaos control. I don't know, but it's my addictive reaction to people's behavior. So when I went off to college, I picked up smoking, and when I stopped smoking, I gained weight, so I kept smoking. When I gave up the smoking, I picked up overeating, and I gained probably 100 pounds or whatever. All through my childhood, I'd struggled with overeating, but I was also fed lots of things because that was the way our family expressed love and comfort. And so I began to seek my comfort in outside things. When I lived in Germany for 9 years and teaching English abroad. And when I came back, I didn't know anybody here. All my friends had moved away, or I lost touch with them. And again, it was just my family members who, whatever. Anyway, in 1990, I had four members of my family pass away through accidents, heart attacks, breast cancer, and so on. And my best friend died of leukemia, and I went into deep grief. Every time I got a phone call, I thought somebody else died, somebody else died. And I was inconsolable. I was trying to go to work, and I would cry all the time. I'd cry on my way home. I rode my bike to work, and I'd cry all the way home. And a friend of mine suggested I go to grief counseling. And in the grief counseling, the counselor, we worked on the grief, but she said, "Lynn, I whined about the binging and the hanging out, being hung over from the food and the weight gain, and it was all, if I could get that under control, everything would be fine, right?" But she said to me, "Lynn, I'm helping you with the grief, but we're not making much progress because you don't want to feel your feelings and you binge all the time, and all we're talking about is binging." She said, "I have a friend who's joined a 12-step fellowship, and here's her phone number and name, and I want you to call her because she's lost 80 pounds and kept it off for 9 years." And I thought, oh my God, she kept it off. How did she keep it off? Because I always reverted back to the compulsive overeating and cried while I was compulsively overeating because I couldn't stop. The compulsion, the obsession was so strong, and the allergy of the body had no concept of any of that. I just wanted comfort. I just wanted to blotto out and sedate. So that's why I used my addictions, was to blotto out so I don't feel anything. And so I went to my first program, and that was a fellowship of overeating. And I got the steps. I worked the program as hard as I could. There were lots of tools. I would use the outreach tool and then binge. I would do whatever they told me to do and then binge. So my progress in that program was periods of abstinence followed by more binging. And I didn't know when I was going to stop once I picked up the behavior again. My sponsor once graphically said, "Lynn, you're like somebody who steps out of a 22-story building and thinks you're just going to fall one floor." And it wasn't, I never knew where I would land. And sometimes it was months or years. But I began to hear in the program that there was somewhere a solution, and people talked a little bit about God. And the more I thought about it, I had no religion. So the more I thought about it, I thought, what is this God talk that I keep hearing? What's the God talk? And I began searching for the God talk. And when my first sponsor had me read the AA Big Book, and I read it all the way through with it, and it made no sense to me whatsoever. Absolutely none, because I'm not an alcoholic. So I held that all at bay. And the steps didn't mean anything to me because I wasn't an alcoholic, and great for them and how wonderful, but I don't understand it. And so that was the end of my experience with the Big Book, and that was in 1990. In 2000, I was called to be an events coordinator, called meaning I was offered to join somebody to be a convention chair to put on the annual convention in the region for my fellowship, which I said yes to because I didn't know what it meant. It was a huge job. And so I worked for a whole year trying to get this convention going in 2020. And of course, in February, everything shut down and we went to Zoom instead of a big hotel in San Francisco. And so we went to Zoom, and that was fine because everybody else knew what they were doing, and we did the convention on Zoom. I heard a lot at the convention. I heard a lot of talk about the God talk. And in our fellowship, and they were talking about the 12 steps that applied to them, and I was getting glimpses of it. And I did by then have a spiritual path, but it didn't involve anything about my addiction, because God was way up here and I was down here, and my prayers were sending messages out to sea in a bottle. I didn't know that there could be communication between the two. And so in that convention, a woman from Cleveland, Ohio, contacted me and said, she's the convention coordinator for Cleveland. She'd like to work with me to see how we do the convention on Zoom. And I said, yeah, come to the meeting. So I started going to her meeting, and gosh, they were only reading the big book. And they were talking about their obsession of the mind and allergy of the body. They were talking about a solution, which still was vague to me. In my fellowships, people would say, somehow it all just kicked in. And it didn't just kick in for me. If you just keep coming back and you keep working the program, it'll all just kick in, and it didn't. And then I heard two things. One is, it doesn't work for people who are unconstitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And I thought, that must be me, because it's not working for me. And the other thing I heard was, we need to be into acceptance. So I accepted the fact that I was constitutionally incapable of being absent. And I was living with that. I was happy with that. I thought, this is the best it can be. Stella, sit, sit. This is the best it can be. So it's better than nothing. Excuse me, I have to let the dog out. Sorry. So I had accepted, but now I'm hearing that there's a solution, and it's for everybody. It's like millions of alcoholics have recovered. What? Recovered with ED? You mean they're not alcoholic anymore? And I thought, I need to explore this. So I went to the Cleveland meetings, and then after 6 months, and they were talking about the big book, but after like 4 or 5 months, they went dark. And I called her and said, where are you guys? She goes, oh, we went back in person. Cleveland, Ohio is like 2,000 miles away. So I asked a friend in my other program, my fellowship, I said, oh, I want more of this. And she said, I have something for you. And I said, what? She said, there's a Wednesday meeting in OA, this thing called BBA, and it's Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, and they're in London, and they're recovered from their diseases of whatever sort. So I thought, okay. I went to the first BBA meeting, and it was just like amazing. Nobody mentioned food. Nobody mentioned their alcoholic qualifier. People were talking about their own personal recovery and their relationship to their God. And they were talking about working and maintaining their recovery, and that some had recovered from the hopeless state of mind and body. And I thought, I must have this thing, literally. When I read through, I asked this woman to take me through the BBA steps, and it was just mind-blowing to me. I cried a lot. I allowed myself to just throw my whole, as stubborn as I was, digging in my heels about my other program, I totally abandoned that when I heard the set-aside prayer, which to me was like magic. God, please enable me. Enable me doesn't mean help me, but it means enable means to give me the power. Give me your power to set aside all this crap I know about my recovery and my food issues and my Al-Anonic issues and my agnostic issues. Help me set those aside for an open mind and a new experience. And help me see the truth. I thought, oh my gosh, all this time I've been lying to myself. I have been accepting things that these people have recovered from that. And so I worked the BBA program as written. I did everything she told me to do. I wrote everything. I called people and read everything because I thought, I'm not going to blow this one. And I loved the meetings because they were talking only about being in the solution, how to maintain the solution, and that the maintenance of our program, the program, even in the couple of prefaces, it mentions the solution that I've been looking for, which is altruism and getting closer to God, or working with others and getting closer to God. And I, by the time I hit page 29, I think it is, where it says, okay, there are 42 stories in the back of the book, and here's me reading it. There's 42 stories, and these stories are about people who, and I thought it was going to say, became abstinent or became sober. It did not. It didn't say that. It said how people got closer to God. And I thought, this is it. This is the solution. I can have this too. It's there for everybody. And I thought, I am not capable, constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself. Thank you. I'm going to be so honest. I'm going to tell things to this person I never did. So this woman took me through the steps. It was one-on-one, which was amazing because I just had her all to myself. And I listened to some audio tapes in the workshop every week with her, took notes. We shared the notes, did the exercises, and I got recovery. I got an understanding that I can have long conversations or short with my higher power, that my higher power has given me the ability to abstain. He's given me the power that I didn't have because I wasn't aware of the power, but I was aware now that I had access to that power to help me be the best Lynn I can possibly be, which I feel now. I feel like I'm the best person I've ever been. I'm straight with my relationships. I've done the work and the amends and all the steps with to get over the resentments and the difficulties. I have a loving understanding of the difficulties my parents went through in their generation and my grandparents. And the fact that my job now is to show up and keep maintaining the work I do through the discipline of the program, which means following the same steps. And for me, that it boils down to two things. Having a close relationship with God, meaning on a daily basis, on an hourly basis. I do want to say the third step prayer every day and the seventh step prayer, but the third step prayer I changed because it says, God, please, I offer myself to thee to build with thee and build with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that blocks out the sunlight, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over, I say these, because they're part of me, they're in me. These difficulties are manufactured in my sweet little mind, and not victory over them, because them kind of puts it out there. And the step refers to also these. So I say victory over these, because then I own it. It's not because of some qualifier said them and then I'm reacting. It's because these feelings I bring up because I am reacting. And I also, I know that the first three steps I learned from now on, just quoting people I've heard in this room, some of you may be quoted. The first three steps are choices. I made a choice that I was powerless, that I couldn't do it, and I'm going to turn my will and my life over to God. That was a choice. The next steps, all the rest of the steps are directions on how to do that and what to do at the end. I had a great experience the other day. I went into a meeting. When I finished the BBA work, my sponsor said, now you go out and get three sponsees. I go, oh, I don't know where to get them. She goes, go to a meeting and put their name in the chat and say, I'm ready to sponsor. Oh, I don't know how to do it. Well, she said, do exactly what I did. I had a binder full of what we did. So she said, just start at page one, go through page two. If you have a problem, call me. I never called her because I knew exactly what she had done. It was all there. And I know now that my job is to ask for my higher will for me, ask for the power to carry it out, and that I will always be in good hands. Now, I don't always do that. Those difficult times we all have, I'm going to say this wrong, so I'm going to look it up. The difficult times we all have, I use the WADAT. It's a mini 10th step. I watch for the selfishness, dishonesty, the difficult times we all have. I ask God at once. First, I ask him, what am I feeling? Because I don't know. I don't know what I'm feeling. But when he tells me, I ask him to remove them. I have to identify them though. I discuss it with somebody else. I make amends if I need to. And then I immediately turn my thoughts to others. And this sometimes can take 30 seconds and sometimes hours and a whole fourth step. But I know my time is up, but I want to say I have the best life I could possibly have. I wished I had it when I was a teenager. Didn't happen. I'm in my mid-70s. But now my relationship to my God is something I wrote down. It just made it clear to me that God is with me at all times, surrounding me. I heard Dan Sherman say in a tape, God is like water, and we're like fishes in water trying to get closer to water. And that was pretty amazing to me because I thought I'd been looking, you know, God was always up here and I'm down here and I was cut off. But I know that God was always with me and that my recovery is on schedule and I'm going to continue that. So when asked to speak or serve, I say yes, because I know it's better for me than what I can think of. So with that, I thank you for the opportunity. And I'm glad that I'm in this new meeting because I'm committed. And I'm grateful for that.